Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
Welcome to Vega's World. I'm your most excellent host, JC Vega. Thank you all for tuning in. A lot to cover this week. My thoughts on Ironheart and Squid Games, some Fast and Furious news, some Street Fighter movie news, Sinners tidbits, all that and so much more. So let's dive right into it. First up on the list, some Street Fighter casting news. Now, I did a bigger casting breakdown on YouTube. You can go watch it there. Go to the YouTube channel, Vega's World. Watch the video. Come back here and listen to the follow-up. First up, M. Bison will be played by David Desmulsion from Late Night with the Devil. Now, his casting as M. Bison, I have to say that I am skeptical about. He's a fantastic actor. Do not get me wrong. Fantastic actor. However, I just cannot see him as M. Bison. I mean, the short list, you know, I mean, Raul Julia played him in the 1994 film. He hammed it up and did tremendous in that movie, as good as that movie could be. Neil McDonough played him in the Legend of Chun-Li film. Now, Neil McDonough is, he's been around. He's a solid actor. Again, I don't know. I don't buy him as M. Bison either. It's a short list. I mean, I don't know. He's got a strong chin and such. Not him, Neil McDonough, but M. Bison, the character's got like a strong chin. And like, I just can't see David Desmulsion as M. Bison. But hey, he's casted. He's in the movie. That's that. Guile, formerly played by Jean-Claude Van Damme, will be played by former WWE World Heavyweight Champion, the American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes. Now, Cody Rhodes has done some acting before himself. He was in Arrow as Derek Sampson. He was in Warehouse 13 as Kurt Smoller. He's been in a few things. Interesting choice, again. I mean, it's funny. The American tattoo, they could just keep his, you know, American Nightmare logo that's on his neck as the Guile tattoo, I guess, if you really want to go that route. That'd be so funny. That's an interesting choice. I mean, he joins Roman Reigns, who's playing Akuma. So, hey, two wrestlers casted in this film. That could be very interesting. Chun-Li will be played by Kalina Lang. Kalina Lang has been in another television series like Cody Rhodes. She played in The Foundation. She's played in a movie called Bad Genius. She's got a few acting credits to her name. She's a relatively newcomer. Good for her. Make your money, boo-boo. But overall, this movie is such a weird hodgepodge of people. People that I wouldn't even fathom casting have been casted in certain roles. Now, Street Fighter is inherently silly, okay? We can all agree to that. I mean, we've got guys who shoot fireballs, a random dictator, a green-skinned, orange-haired monster man. Like, it's absurd, right? It's not, you're not getting some deep philosophical shit out of this film. Like, it's not Squid Games where you're going to be deep in thought and make you question life. But it can be fun. But, like, this casting is so weird. And Kaito Sakurai, who directed such television shows as The Eric Andre Show, Dave, he's a comedic director, so I feel like we're getting a parody out of this film. I don't know, but it's just so odd. It's a very odd choice, and I don't think it's going to go the way the studio wants it to go. But I could be wrong. You know, crazier things have happened, right? Crazier things have occurred in this world. But also, to follow up on the wrestlers cast in movies, Jordan Grace is announced to be in a fantasy feature called Welcome to Paradise. Welcome to Paradise is a fantasy film that is being that was written and directed by Richard Summer Scalvert. It's in post-production right now. It is a surreal fantasy film that will blend psychological drama, dark comedy, mythic surrealism, centering on a mysterious carnival where winning may mean survival and losing could trap visitors in an alternate reality forever. Now, that sounds very interesting. Jordan Grace, this is her first movie role ever. And while she is a professional wrestler and, you know, to argue there's some acting involved, but it's different levels and different acts entirely. She could be good. I know she could be. I don't know how significant her role is going to be in this film, but, you know, good for her. I know with Endeavor buying WWE and merging it with the UFC to not merging it with UFC, but pulling the UFC and WWE together to make TKO, the people there had a connection to a talent agency as well through Endeavor. So they're getting their wrestlers, obviously, in some big movies and television shows. So good for her. I will watch out of morbid curiosity, if anything. So there's that. And some fun news. There's going to be a Harold and Kumar sequel, and it will be written and directed by the creators of Cobra Kai. Now, that's an interesting turn, you know, going from Johnny Lawrence being a bum in his like late 40s or mid 40s after losing to Daniel LaRusso in a tournament and flipping the script where Daniel LaRusso kind of comes off like a jerk. And that, I mean, you know, eventually they change things, but the overall premise was, you know, let's follow Johnny. So going from that to Harold and Kumar, that could be fun. I'm looking forward to that. I loved Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. I hadn't seen any of the other sequels, but that could be fun. You know, it's always good to see that sort of stuff. Let's talk a little bit about the Fast and Furious news. Vin Diesel has said Universal Studios approached him and said, "Vin, can we get the finale of the Fast and Furious by April of 2027? And Vin said, "Under three conditions. Number one, bring the franchise back to LA. The second was to return to the car culture and street racing. And the third thing was reuniting Dom and Brian O'Connor. That's what you're going to get in the finale." And to that, I don't know if I agree with that choice. I mean, famously, you know, as you are probably well aware, Paul Walker died in 2013 at the end of November in a car crash. They had to rework Fast and Furious 7 to deal with his tragedy. You know, his brothers, Cody and Caleb, stepped in as stand-ins, and they did, you know, heavy CGI and VFX to make the brothers look like Paul. And while the character the character of Brian O'Connor is not dead, I feel it would be in poor taste to have him come back. I know that Vin Diesel cared a lot about Paul Walker, everyone does, and to be honest, the franchise has sorely missed him because I felt like he was a bit of the heart and soul of the franchise. He was practically in every single one, minus Tokyo Drift. I mean, when Vin Diesel left to go try to do other things, Paul Walker held it down for the franchise, and that's Too Fast, Too Furious. So, but it'll just be weird. Like, I don't know how to feel about it. I hope that doesn't come to pass. I mean, maybe if like there's a brief moment where Brian's at a barbecue, I can deal with it. But like, I hope it's nothing more than that. Cause I don't know. I feel it'd just be weird to have that character come back like that. I mean, we've seen it happen with Star Wars and Rogue One with the general and some other actors, the android in Alien Romulus was modeled after a deceased actor and played a pivotal role in that film. I don't know, but something about this just feels very exploitive to me. That's just my opinion on that. Let's talk a little bit about Squid Games now. Now, Squid Game 3 has come out. Squid Game 2 and 3 were filmed, I guess, back-to-back or all at the same time, if we're going to be honest. And everyone wanted to know what was going to happen to Gi-hun, player number 456. What was going to happen with the detective whose brother was the front man of the games? How was all that gonna come to pass? And I will say this, that the first half of Squid Games 3 was very well done. It had some heart-wrenching moments, some shocking moments, some cathartic moments that were I was waiting for since the second season. Towards the end, you know, we had the big revolt where Gi-hun tried to stage a coup. I don't know, I don't even call it a coup, but like to disrupt everything and try to get to the front man and end this whole charade. Well, they didn't, and they kept him alive to finish out the Squid Game. And the ending, while I understand, I'm not going to spoil it, by the way, I understand its message. I understand the themes they were going for in that ending. I wish they would have gone about it completely different. I think it'd have been more cathartic for me as a viewer if they would have gone a different route. While, again, I understand it's the message they were going for and what they were accomplishing with the ending that they went with. You know, the actor who played Gi-hun, Mr. Lee Jung-jae, was also surprised at how his character's end would come. And he spoke to the director about if there was, you know, different ways that they were going to go about how they were going to end the show. And with the way they ended it, I will say this. Netflix, leave it be. Pretty please. Don't go anywhere further. We don't need to explore anymore. I say this, but there's been talks of David Fincher doing a Squid Game, whether it's I'm not too familiar with the particulars, if it's going to be like a full-on remake or if it's just going to be, you know, a side story to it. I mean, if anybody can do it, I guess it's David Fincher, but I don't know, man. I just don't want Netflix to milk the hell out of this franchise. I mean, I know they're trying to or going to have to because Stranger Things is ending and that was their cash cow and they ain't got a whole lot else going on, but yeah, not how I thought this show was going to go. And they left a lot of loose ends in this season that I know are not going to get resolved, even if they do a spinoff or side series. Like, David Fincher ain't going to pick up that story left off. And to me, that's heartbreaking. I mean, we had all this buildup from the first two seasons, and I wanted to see how that would conclude, and we got nothing on one of those fronts in one of the story arcs in the show. And that kind of that felt like a waste of time and pisses me off. But I guess maybe that's also to go with, hey, that's just life, and that's the way it could go. I don't know. I could be, you know, that's just the way I guess I'm trying to interpret it. But yeah, I wish they would have done more about that. It almost felt akin to Jaime Lannister's arc in Game of Thrones. That's how that felt to me, how disappointing this story arc was. Again, I'm not going to go too spoiler into it because I want you all to watch it for yourselves. Maybe down the line, I will go full on in-depth review if that's something everyone wants to hear. But with that end, even though, again, it was dissatisfying in a sense, it still was worth the watch. And while it may not be the ending I would have gone with or would have liked to have seen, I get it. So to give this series or this season a number rating, I'll give it a 4.5 out of 5. I just wish they would have, the landing would have stuck a little better for me, in my opinion. So that's my brief thoughts on that. The rights to Akira have gone back to the publisher. The rights of Akira have gone back to its publisher, Kodansha. Warner Brothers has historically had the film rights for this film since like the early 2000s. The filmmaker for Blade, Stephen Norrington, was tapped to direct it at one point with John Peters, producer. John Peters famously wanted a huge spider in Superman Returns or Superman Lives, whatever it was called, the one that Kevin Smith talked about. He wanted a spider in that and didn't get it in that, but he got it in Wild Wild West. That'd have been a wild film to have witnessed if that would have gone. And there was another stint or another period of time where the project was in development in 2012. It was going to have a $90 million budget with Garrett Hedlund, who was in Tron Legacy, set to star in it with Kirsten Stewart and Helena Bonham Carter and Kent Watanabe. They were all set to be in this film, and that got put on hold in 2017. Taika Waititi came on board to write and direct, which, thank God, we are not ever going to see a Taika Waititi directed and written Akira movie. Now, granted, Jojo Rabbit was a fine film, you know, and it's quirky indie-ness, but I hated his turn in Love and Thunder, and I don't know, he just rubs me the wrong way. But I don't think America could fully do justice to the Akira story. It's a very abstract film, and it's an anime that I've had to watch several times to fully wrap my head around. I mean, visually, it's stunning, and I don't know how you could replicate that in live action. I mean, I guess it could definitely have the Blade Runner vibe, which I feel like that was a bit of the inspiration too in the anime. But yeah, no, I'm glad that it's not gonna be done, because some of the, you know, previous history for this development hell project has been wild. I mean, there have been writers and directors such as Gary Whitta, Mark Fergus, Hawk Ospie, Kevin Close, Alan and Albert Hughes, Jamie Colette Sella. You know, there's just random hodgepodge of people, and it never quite got off the ground. So, you know, maybe some things are just left alone, you know, that and the Breakfast Club. If there was ever a Breakfast Club remake, I will fight everyone down the line, from the producers to, you know, the cast, the extras, everybody. Don't ever touch that movie, and leave Akira alone. Unless somebody comes along who can get close to what was with the anime. I mean, you don't have to be a one-to-one, but like, at least get close to the spirit of it. But, you know, as for right now, thank God we ain't getting that. Just all I'm going to say. Back to some more wrestling news. Sukeban, a Japanese-American promotion. It's mostly been in America. They've had a show in New York and such. They partnered up with the Strikes entity, Docomo Studio, and Live in DSL. They partner with this group who specialize in taking a Japanese-focused content and exporting it internationally. And they've done deals with Amazon Prime and Netflix to bring, you know, various other forms of entertainment from Japan to the world. And Sukeban is a hodgepodge of, you know, anime, manga, music. It's really interesting from what I've seen. That, you know, I've only seen clips of it on Instagram and Twitter. You know, Bull Nakano is also a part of it. There's some bigger Japanese Joshi names, female wrestlers, for those of you who don't know what the term Joshi means. But no, this is pretty cool news. You know, it could help broaden the IP and expand it. I mean, you could make animes and mangas out of the characters and performers a part of this promotion. You know, K-pop is big around the world, so I think this would be cool to bring a different eyes to pro professional wrestling, not strictly or in the pure pro wrestling sense, you know, with all this other stuff that's combined in it with idol culture from Japan, you know, the pop idol stuff, the way this all brings together. I mean, they have a show July 5th at the Anime Expo, and TikTok is helping broadcast that, so that'll be cool. I want to see what they do with that and what comes of this partnership. So that's really cool news. I just wanted to throw that in there. This isn't a wrestling podcast, but that's some really cool stuff. And again, anything to further the gospel of professional wrestling to the world in different forms. Because, you know, WWE has its own sports entertainment style. AEW's pure wrestling. PWG was like the best of the best for indies. Same with Ring of Honor. And this is a different style altogether. And, you know, Japanese wrestling from the States is niche too, in a sense, but I feel like with all these different avenues, like again, with the cross blending of idol culture, manga, anime, it could be really fun. So we'll see what happens with that. The Sinners tidbit that I was talking about earlier, the producer Sev Ohanen said that the costumes of the extras wore in Sinners was gotten from Marvel, because at the time of they were in pre-production, Blade was in pre-production, and there's going to be, I guess, maybe, I don't know if it was a sequence or maybe a bulk of the story was going to be set and say around the same time period as Sinners was taking place. So they just bought those outfits and repurposed it for Sinners. And well, that is a fun little tidbit. And the costume designer for that, Ruth Carter, was working on that Blade movie as well as Sinners. It frustrates me because we're not getting a freaking Blade movie. It's been in developmental hell. Mahershala Ali doesn't know what Marvel's doing with it right now. They were close to being in production. Then the writer's strike happened. Then the actor's strike happened. A lot of shit has, happened around that film, and we're just not getting it. So it's a fun little fact that it's cool that, hey, at least the stuff didn't go to waste and that Sinners used it. And there's that Marvel synergy in that Ryan Coogler is a producer on Ironheart. He directed Black Panther, and he was producer on Wakanda Forever. I think he's also producing the animated feature or animated series Eyes of Wakanda. So that's pretty cool, but that's a fun little fact. And again, it makes me really angry that we don't have a fucking Blade movie. Get it to us, man. Mahershala Ali ain't getting any younger. He's already in his late 40s, early 50s, somewhere around there. I want to see him as Blade. We got a sniff of it in the Eternals with his voice and how he sounded, and it was cool, but I want to see him in action. I want to see what he does with the character. Give us fucking Blade. All right, on that note, an indie project has been announced. I don't really do indie drama news or any news, indie news in general, but I feel like this is pretty cool considering one of the people involved. But anyway, Tyler Marie Evans is making her feature debut as a writer-director. It's called Pretty Babies, and it will be starring Ashley Benson, Emily Lon Lind, Madeline Petcht, and Sadie Stanley. And these actresses, well, to start it off, Christine Vachon is from Killer Films, is producing alongside Jordan Wagner of Wagner Entertainment. Benson will produce. Amanda Larney of Killer Films is associate producer. She spoke a little bit about Tyler Marie, and she had this to say. I knew immediately upon meeting her that there's something special about her. She brings a unique, personal, and compelling vision to a story that truly deserves to be told. It's her passion and her perspective that drew me to this project. And now partnering with Christine and Killer Films, along with the incredible cast we've assembled, we couldn't have asked for a better team to bring it to life. Now, the story is said to be a love letter to old Hollywood, and it's... its premise, it's about two girls who want to chase the Hollywood stardom, but their dreams lead them into prostitution, trapping them into the dark underbelly of sex work industry as they travel from Texas to California. Now, some of these actresses involved, such as Lind, who was in the Babysitter franchise. She's also in the HBO Max reboot, Gossip Girls, Dr. Sleep, Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire. That's what initially got my interest because she's a phenomenal actress. I liked her as Melanie in the Babysitter. I feel like I'm going to cover the Babysitter on Vegas World at some point, either in a new to me watch along with one of my co-hosts at some point. Stanley, she's been seen in Karate Kid Legends, as well as Somewhere in Queens, which was directed by Ray Romano, and also the anthology series Cruel Summer. She was also in a Kim Possible live-action movie, which I didn't realize there was a Kim Possible live-action movie for Disney Channel. I don't know why didn't no one tell me this? But anyway, that's pretty cool. I'll be on the lookout for it. Some of the other cast members were in such films as Spring Breaker and Pixels from Sony, along with Adam Sandler. So it's a pretty neat, interesting film. Sounds like an interesting premise. A first time director, it's a good way to start as an independent film. So that's pretty fun. Finally, let's get to Ironheart. Now, there's been a lot of talk about Ironheart. Even before it came out, people were like, oh, it's been on the shelf for years because Marvel is embarrassed to release it. They don't want to release it. They've been trying to figure out ways to edit things out, edit around it, maybe reshoots, maybe recastings. Oh, there's a reason it hasn't come out yet, though they don't talk about how the writer strike, the actor strike, and other things, and I don't know if COVID actually affected this production, but a lot of other extenuating circumstances prevented this film or this series from being released. And I watched it, and it's, you know, centers around Riri Williams, aka Ironheart, who developed her own Iron Man suit as seen in Wakanda Forever. She was an MIT student. She got kicked out for helping other students with assignments and giving them finished work, especially at other schools too, and that's frowned upon. She had to talk her way out of it and say, you know, people, I'm trying to do something iconic and everyone wants to make me small. And the dean of students is like, hey, no one told you that you had to be small. This is a product of your own consequence. And that's the big overarching theme for this show, is that Riri Williams makes a lot of poor decisions. Riri Williams' actions bring on a lot of consequences. And she's not, I mean, it's interesting that they've made a hero so flawed. And I mean, in a sense, some of the actions she takes in this show would make you think she's a villain with some of the decisions she's chosen to make as a character, which is very interesting. It's a very unique spin. I mean, I'm all for characters showing flaws and not being perfect, or a Mary Sue. And, you know, it was going to have a big hill to climb because of Dominique Thorne's ethnicity and the cast being of heavily featuring minorities and set in Chicago. I mean, the show itself has I love the tone. I love the atmosphere they've set. They truly made you feel like you are in Chicago, in this version of Chicago. The soundtrack, pristine, Magnifico. They played Kick Push 2, a deep cut for a Lupe fiasco. That's cool that they added that in there. But, you know, the choice that Riri makes at the end of this all was very interesting to me. A choice that I didn't think she was gonna make. And it's pretty much left it on a cliffhanger. I'm assuming they're gonna, if reviews and ratings are there for it, they will give us a second season. But the way they left it, I'm skeptical on, you know, her choice. It was interesting. It could be deception, you know, like in a similar sense of how, you know, when Glenn was around a dumpster and everyone thought he was, you know, being eaten alive by zombies, it really wasn't. He was, you know, underneath somebody who was getting eaten by zombies. So it could be a deception. I don't know. But I was shocked that they went the way they did. There's a certain appearance of, I'm not going to spoil it for you. I just want you to watch it. But I will say that Sacha Baron Cohen is magnificent in his time on the screen. Now, overall, the show, is it as good as a Loki or WandaVision? No. Is it as bad as Secret Invasion and some other poorly received MCU television shows? No, it's in the middle of the road for me. Again, I was surprised at the choices they made with Riri at certain times. It was bold of them to do, but I guess that could be the nature of iron suit wearing individuals. I mean, Tony Stark was a flawed man himself, and he had to develop and become more altruistic. I mean, he was always altruistic in a sense, but more than an egotistical asshole, I'll say that. But, you know, the show was fine. I'll give it a 3 out of 5 if I put a number ranking on it. But all the hype around how, oh, it's so bad, it's the worst thing ever to come out of Marvel, it's the worst series ever. No, it's not. That's not even the case. I get it. Grifters got a grift, but it's not that at all. Not at all. And a final bit of news, or tidbit, the trailer for the new Running Man, the remake, and I don't even know if you technically call it a remake, because it's not going to go beat for beat like the Arnold Schwarzenegger film. Edgar Wright was a writer and director on this film. The trailer came out this past week, and man, I loved it. I can't wait for it. Edgar Wright has not made a bad movie. He directed Scott Pilgrim vs. the World and Baby Driver, phenomenal films. The man does not miss. And Glenn Powell as Ben Richards, it's very different from the Schwarzenegger one. Obviously, in the books, he was written differently. The book was written by Richard Bachman, a.k.a. Stephen King. Obviously, he used an alias because he didn't want people to think he was just selling books just off his name alone. He wanted to prove to himself that he could write a compelling story and it sell. And in this film, you know, Josh Brolin is the Dan Killian in this version, the head of the network. And instead of it being around one game in a centralized location, it's going to be a free-for-all. Like, the dude's got to survive for like 30 days. And, you know, there's eyes everywhere on him. It's almost like a Truman Show type of thing. It's really interesting. Coleman Domingo, as they showed him as, I guess, the TV host for this version of The Running Man. He seemed like he's going to be pretty good in it. Glenn Powell, he's been in the movie Hitman, Twisters, I think. Yeah, he was in the sequel of Twisters, Top Gun Maverick. You know, he's been pretty good in the stuff I've seen him in. But this looks, you know, it's got Edgar Wright's style and tone. It feels like it's going to be a lot more comedic. I mean, there are some funny one-liners, but this feels like it's going to be a lot more comedic in tone. And I'm stoked for it, man. I can't wait. I will be there opening night if I have it my way. I'm not resting or anything. I do know that. So that looks pretty cool. Can't wait. Can't wait for that. So, yeah, I think about it covers it all this week, ladies and gentlemen. Go follow me on YouTube. We have a Vegas World YouTube channel, the first ever true video for YouTube. I put up some of the old podcasts with myself, Aaron Nova, and Caden Green talking about Power Rangers and such. But we have a Street Fighter casting video, which I talked about earlier. Go check that out. Like, subscribe, follow us on Instagram and Twitter, and Sky Blue is a professional wrestler and another entertainer. There's two different people by that name. Don't look up the second one if you're under the age of 18, please. I don't know why I mentioned that. Whatever. But Blue Sky, Vegas World Pod on those platforms. You can follow me at the JC Vega on all social media platforms. If you want to support the show with merchandise, go to ProWrestlingTees.com and get yourself a Vegas World t-shirt. If you want to support me, the professional wrestler, JC Vega, and my professional wrestling endeavors, buy my JC Vega t-shirts there. One says Punk Rock, the other says Rainbow Dash. Thank you, Nicole, for that great quote that I always use. You are a tremendous friend. With that, ladies and gentlemen, good night. Party on.